This episode of Finding Demo Surfishing is being brought to you by DS Custom Tackle. Delaware guys, you know, I love them. They got a whole bunch of good stuff. And it's more than just drop rigs. It's more than just pompano rigs and floats and hooks. Oh, they got a bunch of stuff. Teasers, jigs, rig for the boat, water, or I'm sorry, for the beach, inshore. They got a bunch of stuff. Go over to DSCustomTackle.com. Take a look at the website. Get your order in. You won't be disappointed. It will really get you hooked up. Good stuff. Welcome back, everybody. New week, new episode. Hope you're doing well wherever you are and things are just going phenomenal. Good old winter fishing still in full effect here at Dublin Met if you're in the Northern Hemisphere in Northern America. And winter fishing brings a whole lot of fun challenges. Well, this week we're actually getting on the digital bus and we're heading up to South Carolina. And we're doing something a little different this week. We're going to be talking with Outcast Fishing. Oh my gosh, my cough is still there. So we're going to be talking with Outcast, Captain Chip. He runs a great charter out of Hilton Head area, if I'm not mistaken. I'm almost positive that's what it is. My brain sometimes works and sometimes it doesn't. You guys know how that is. But Outcast Sport Fishing, you can take a look on social media. He's on there. He's got his website, all these things. He's done a lot of cool things in the fishing community. And this week, we're going to be talking heavily about sharks. Why am I giving you the preface now without telling you what we're doing? Well, I want you to know because I know a lot of you are like, whoa, we're talking sharks again. This one's different. This one we're talking about boats, but we're talking a lot more about the species and growth and his charter business and why things are the way they are. You're going to pick up a bunch of stuff from this. Trust me. I know you will. So without me flapping my jibs, 40s and you hear everyone, let's get him on the show. Captain, welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me. This is awesome. I'm excited to do this.
Well, we've only been talking about it and bouncing back and forth like, hey, what do you got today? What do you got tomorrow? What do you got this? And then I got sick and I was like, man, everything's getting jacked up, man. I appreciate your patience.
No, I appreciate yours, man. I've had a rough couple of weeks or a few weeks. So, yeah, thanks for being patient. I appreciate it.
Well, we're going to get into this one. So let's kick it right under the beginning. Let's get you going through this. Tell us your story and what got you into fishing.
You know, just obsessed with it. When I was about 4 years old, my parents booked a charter here in Hilton Head with a guy named Fuzzy Davis. And we went out, caught a big shark. And ever since then, I was just obsessed. And I was living in Kentucky at the time. So went back to Kentucky and just, man, out from there on, I was chasing frogs and crawdads and shooting stuff with my BB gun and just always outside and stuff, man. But I always wanted to be a charter guide and then moved to Hilton Head. When I was about 11 or 12, full time. And then from there, man, I was fishing in the lagoons and off the beach and just obsessed with it. And you know, I've always been obsessed with sharks and it just kind of went from there where, I just trying to figure out where the best spots on the beach here were and what to use for bait. And I mean, we were even chumming off the beach. I don't know if I should be saying some of this stuff, but man, we were.
Yeah, it's old, old rules.
Yeah, they were old, a long time ago. I'm old, so yeah. And man, yeah, just obsessed with it. So there's just really nothing else I wanted to do. It's going to school here, high school, and man, I remember fishing off the beach before school and going after school and trying crazy stuff and catching some pretty big sharks off the beach, which I thought were pretty big at the time. But now looking back, I'm like, gosh, what was that? You know, I could have used that for bait. But yeah, it's been a dream come true, really.
That's great, man. So what's your favorite thing now about fishing?
Right now I'm obsessed with these great white sharks. I mean, that's really what I look forward to. And they're here in the winter months. And man, I love doing that. But you know what? I also love the summer stuff when I get people that just – like, hey, I want to get a big tiger shark. It's a dream come true, or a hammerhead or a tarpon or something like that. I love doing that as well. So the summer is a lot different than it is in the wintertime, because in the summer, we're only going out for 4 or 5 or 6 hours, depending on the time slot. But in the winter, we're going, these charters are 10, 12 hours long. So it's hardcore in the wintertime. But I really like both of them. But Yeah, man, the Great Whites have kind of they're definitely taken up the majority of my brain. That seems to be my obsession at the moment, at least.
All right. So before people start freaking out here, hold on. We've got to say this before we start talking. Captain Chip's doing a lot of things with catching these sharks. It's not just catching. It's not a, there are rules that are still followed and all that stuff. He is very well versed in it. I'm going to say that pre-go here as we're 5 minutes into the show before you guys freak out. There is a lot more. Stay tuned because we're going to talk through it. So calm down. And I say that because you know it as well as I do here. And I've seen it a lot on my side. And I don't even fish for shark. It's a hot button topic talking about shark fishing.
Oh man, it's gosh, I can't tell you all the, you know, I'm on Instagram and Facebook and all this stuff, but, and I post stuff and, you know, you get a few likes and, you know, a few nice comments, but if you put up a great white or a big tiger shark, man, the majority of the comments are positive, but there's still a lot that are, you know, you jerk, how could you do this? How could you do that? How would you like it if I did that to you? You know, so it's very sensitive. And now that I've been in this great white scene for some years, it's gains a lot of interest, but it also gets a lot of, man, there's a lot of negative, you know, comments, a lot of upset people. And but little do they know, you know, I'm not just going out and trying to, you know, a lot of these people think that I'm killing them or I'm, you know, but we're putting satellite tags in them. And, but it is, it's a very sensitive subject and people are very, they get very upset, you know, when it comes to the sharks and stuff. So I've learned a lot. I'll tell you, these great whites have taught me a whole lot about, you know, the publicity on them and just the science too, learning what they're doing, why they're here and what they're feeding on and stuff. So it is definitely a sensitive subject for the public when it goes viral or something.
Yeah, I mean, our buddy down here, Coastal Worldwide, I'm sure you probably heard about it. They caught another great white. They caught it here off Navarre from the beach.
Man, what a great video, too.
It was. I mean, those guys, Dylan Blaine, great human beings. I'm very fortunate I've had them on the show. And they were even saying, you know, we were kind of talking about, they're like, yeah, man, when you catch a great white, it's a thrill. But it's like, as soon as you post it, you're like, okay. Here, yeah. I know the bash is coming, and it's the same thing. Yeah, when I was talking with Terra Firma, Spencer said the same thing. He's like, "Oh, it's a real sensitive subject." As soon as you say the word great white, and you know, you get into these, and it's just been a constant. Like, look, this is education. We are not killing this fish. We are getting it in. We're getting it out. All is well, and we're adding to the science. Yeah, and I think a lot of people that are not in our world, you know, they don't think of it like that.
Yeah. It's definitely a sensitive subject. And unfortunately, you know, there's some guys out there that have, you know, like you got Mark the Shark and he's down there in South Florida and he kills a large amount of sharks every single year. And then when he kills them, they go viral and it goes nuts. So when the person from Kansas or Ohio or New York, California, when they see that, then they think all of us are like that. They're like, oh, this is a charter guide or this is a shark fisherman that went out and look at these big tiger sharks he's dragging in. That's terrible. And then, you know, then you get, you know, such a backlash for that. So we get lumped into the same category as these guys that go viral for killing a big tiger shark or a huge mako or whatever it is. And so it is, man, it's very, you know, it's, I tell you, the first couple of great white sharks I ever caught, I didn't even sleep. My phone just rang through the night. I mean, it was just absolutely insane, man. I remember going to a restaurant here, and I remember a news crew showed up at the restaurant, and my buddy that was, he was like, "You can't even go out." It was the craziest thing. But I think that was also, now there's people catching great whites. There's a, you know, guy in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida. I mean, now people are starting to catch more and more of them, so it's not as big of a deal as it was 10 years ago. But man, it you know, those first couple ones I caught, it was like I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep. I mean, I was getting like all these threats and hate mail. So it is, man, it definitely, gets people wound up.
Well, that's why I'm glad we're doing this episode. Cause when we were talking, I know you were like, well, I'm a boat guy. I'm like, I know we're talking about the other stuff. We're talking about the bigger pieces here that the other people don't see behind the scenes.
Yeah.
To hopefully let people know, like, hey, look, everyone that catch sharks is not out there killing sharks. They're not out there slaying the population. They're actually, everyone I talk to that's a shark angler, they're in the, they're tagging for NOAA or one of the programs. They're sending in the data. They're doing the clippings, all these things that go for science to help learn more about the species, but also help with the conservation. I mean, the sharks play a very important part of the ecosystem. And, but every angler I've talked to on the show has always been about the same thing. This is about, yes, the thrill is great, but the science. It's all about in the end.
Yeah. It's funny because the relationship between the fishermen and the scientists has always been kind of edgy, because I feel like, you know, a few of them have really gone after us. There's a guy named David Schiffman. He's really attacked fishermen, which, I mean, he's gone after, he went after me. He went after a bunch of land-based guys. There's been some media members that have gone after us. And I'm saying us as in the land-based guys and the charter guys. And then, you know, 6 months later, you get these scientists, they then call you up and say, hey, you want to work with us? Or, hey, and it's like, wait a second, your buddy just bashed me on Twitter or something for days. Why in the hell am I going to work with you guys? I mean, you guys just crushed us. So it's kind of, you know, you're walking a very thin line when it comes to working with scientists. You just, I don't know, you just, decisions have to be made where you pick the right ones that aren't going to end up, you know, crushing in the end, because it's been great. I've worked with some really great people. Fortunately, I'm working with the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy and Dr. Scomel and John Chisholm and these guys, and they're so nice. They're great people. And they've never tried to ask me, like, you know, how are you getting these things and where are you? Where's your exact location? And where some other scientists have, like, I've been contacted by a couple of guys out of Florida, like, okay, well, how are you doing it? And wait a second, I thought it was about the science. I didn't think it was about, like, you know, I know what they're wanting to do. They're wanting to do it themselves and then, you know, just kind of exploit it from there. So it's, man, but I feel like I got a degree in sharkology here in the last couple of years just working with these guys. It's been cool, though. It's been fun.
That's great. And that's one thing I'm really glad that you come on the show and talk about, that because this is the thing, you know, I want people to understand sharks are they're a mystery to us. They still are. I mean, even numerous scientists have said it. They've all said, this is a strange creature. We're still learning to this day about them. So getting that piece, it's a huge win in. Let me get back on, because we're like halfway into what I want to go into in the long stuff here.
You know what? I'm going to jump all over the place because my mind is like over here and over there. So, you know, you start on something, I'll just go down that branch and not stop. So yeah, just interrupt me if I start going a little too crazy.
See, it's funny. I got all the questions here. I'm like, okay, I control the flow. Ooh, squirrel. Let's talk about that. So you've been fishing a long time, your whole life, you're running a very successful business. Is there anything left on the bucket list fish for you to catch?
Man, I would love to catch a white tip. I've always been fascinated with those. I think they're really prehistoric looking, and they're, you know, open ocean sharks. I think those are awesome, man. I would love to see a white tip shark, oceanic white tip. There was one caught off Charleston years ago, and I don't think the guy was that far out, but it was just, you know, free sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, I would love to see a white tip. But man, I mean, I hate to say it again, but I feel like, you know, I'm catching these great whites. Everything else I feel like is kind of, you know, a step down. I'm not really interested in that many other sharks at the moment. I'm sure I'll change down the road, but right now I've kind of got tunnel vision just on those suckers right now.
Well, it is an apex predator. I mean, it's kind of hard when you catch the apex, like, yes.
It's awesome, man.
Can you share a memorable fishing story, including any unexpected catch or challenging fishing situations that you faced?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Name the subject. A challenging situation. You know, the first great white shark I ever raised to my boat, I was by myself, and I was trying to be the first person to ever catch one here in the state, and so I just kept going out trying to figure them out. And I was in this one spot I'd never fished before, and one came swimming up to the boat and started circling my boat. And at that time, nobody had ever caught one, you know, here or North Carolina, Georgia, Florida. I've always seen like little ones, you know, every once in a while somebody would catch a small one, but never an adult. But here I am off Hilton by myself, and I got one circling the boat. And man, it scared me so bad. Because, you know, I grew up watching Jaws. Like, I know how this ends. I know what's going to happen here. So I'm out there by myself, and this thing circling the boat. My heart is pounding so hard. And I've caught 1,500, 1,800-pound tiger sharks. And I've never seen a shark big enough that could eat any tiger shark I've ever caught in my life. And this thing was huge. And I wanted to go. I was thinking, I'm in a 26-foot boat. This thing is enormous. I'm getting out of here. I'm going to cut the anchor line and get home. It's too much. It's too much. I'm not going to be able to handle this thing. I'm scared to death. It doesn't even want the bait. You know, it wants the boat. It's more interested in the boat than the bait. So but then, you know, the other half of my brain is like, you know what? You waited all your life for this. So I took a big chunk of, I don't know, I don't want to say because they're probably upset people, but I took a big chunk and I threw it over the side of the boat. And I start, you know, kind of, and he breezes right by it. And he wasn't really that interested in it. And then I jigged it once. I kind of hit it. And then he kind of looked at it, turned his head, looked at it, and slowly swam up and hailed it. And then just took off. And then he popped up about 50 yards out and just stood on the surface with a dorsal fin up and a tail up. And I was just like, I cannot believe I'm looking at a great white shark. There it is, you know? And then it took off and I chased that thing all day and all night by myself. And man, I ended up losing it. And it was like it was like winning the lottery. Having your dog die at the same day, winning the lottery, seeing, you know, it was just a ghost. I mean, it was just crazy, man. A whole mix of emotions. And I just couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. It freaked me out so bad. And I went out, one of my best friends, Brian, he's a fighter pilot. And he drops bombs on people and he's been shot at. And I took him out 3 days later to the same spot. And we're sitting there and he didn't think it was going to happen. And I was like, well, let's just sit here and see what happens. And we get another one, came up to the boat and swim. And it was huge. And he was shaking so bad that he couldn't even turn the GoPro on. And I was like, see, now you know. See, this is how it is. This is how it is.
Yeah.
And so we ended up – it was on Super Bowl Sunday. It was actually 10 years ago, almost to the day right now. And we fought that one. We fought that one until like midnight. It was huge. It was bigger than the one I hooked 3 days prior. And But this is my best friend I grew up with. This is a guy we watched Jaws growing up. So it starts swimming at us. And he's like, Chip, it's coming right at us. Go on the boat. He's going to jump in the boat. You know, but that's how raw we were because we knew nothing about it. There was nobody I could call and say, what do you do when, how do you land a 3,000-pound great white shark? Or how do you stop one? Or so we didn't know what to expect. And he was so we fought that one, you know, into the night. We ended up losing that one. And I'll never forget. It was so, it was so memorable. I remember right when we lost it, I took my hat and I spiked it. I threw it down in anger and I said a couple of cuss words and I looked at him and he smiled. And I was like, why are you smiling? And he was like, Chip, you got it. You figured it out. Now you just got to figure out how to stop this fish. And then, I was like, you're right. If we got, two back to back, 3 days apart, then I was like, all right, I just got to go back. And you know what? Then I went back and we hooked a third one a week or two later and lost that one too. So I was actually 0-3 before I finally landed one. And, oh man, I could talk about this forever. How much further do you want me to go into this? I
mean, you're good. Keep going, man. Keep telling me. Because like the progression you're talking about right now is super green, a shade of green. Yeah, we're moving out of the green here. I mean, you keep it going. You're good.
And this is kind of funny, you know. So finally on the fourth time I hooked one, I landed it. It was a small one. It was like a 8.5 footer. It was the smallest one of the one, and that's probably why we landed it. Anyway, we get this thing up the side of the boat, take some awesome pictures, and I'm so excited. Even though it's not the monsters I saw, the weeks prior, it's still a great white shark, first one ever, And so I take some pictures, I put it up on Facebook. I'm like, this is gonna be nuts, And I'm a marketing man, I run a business, so I know what I think is gonna go get some shares. And so the paper calls me up, and the paper's like, this is amazing. This is, this is gonna go nuts, and I think this is gonna go national. I was like, yeah, here's the story. So I give him the story, and about 30, and I give him all the pictures. He calls me back 30 minutes later and he's like, hey, I just talked to the editor and I really appreciate you taking the time to give me your story, but we're going to pass. It's just really hard to believe. We called Charleston and asked the wildlife specialist there, the shark specialist. He said it is possible, but no one's ever caught one and blah, blah, blah. And so he's saying, I'm like, wait a second, you're telling me you don't believe me? You know, with these pictures? And he was like, well, are there any pictures with you in it? I'm like, well, no, I'm not swimming with this thing, you know? And he was like, well, we're just going to have to pass, but thank you. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I called my buddy that was in the thing. I was like, you're not going to believe it. Nobody believes this. Even though in pictures, they still don't believe us. It's like hooking, you know, Sasquatch. This is like the Loch Ness Monster. So so then I went back. I don't know. I think I got skunked a few more times. Lost another one. And then I figured out the light bulb went off on the leader system. I mean, what the tack, the rod, the reel, the leader, the hook. I was like, all right, this is it. I think this is the route to go. And the next one I hooked was a big one. It was like a 14 footer. And it took the bait, it ran and jumped completely out of the water. It's the only shark I've had to go completely airborne. And it was big, man. That was a big animal. And as soon as it jumps out of the water, it starts charging the boat, comes right at us. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this thing jumps again. It's going to land in the boat and sink the boat. This thing's, you know, well over 2,000 pounds. And one of my best friends, Troy, was with me. And Troy, he's a professor from Tennessee. And it swims right out from under the boat and just smokes it. Rips all 400 yards just in a heartbeat. We fought that thing till, I don't know, 9, 10 o'clock at night. But we landed it. At that time, I had teamed up with a scientist. And I had an acoustic tag with me. And I reached over and put my hand on the nose of the shark and got a picture with it. And that was the one that I actually put on social media and went nuts. Next thing you know, Fox was calling, CNN's calling, Good Morning America. I mean, it went absolutely crazy. My phone blew up. I booked the whole season in like 48 hours. I mean, it was crazy. That was the one that I was at a restaurant. I mean, it was just nuts, man. It was absolutely crazy. My buddy from Tennessee was like, I got to get out of here. This is too much. This is, we can't eat. We can't sleep. The phone rings, people knocking on the door. It was nuts, man. It's not like that now. Now it's watered down and the interest isn't there like it was. But those first couple of big ones were crazy. So then, you know, then I started having, you know, just awesome opportunities in different areas and it's, man, it's been a dream. I'm excited just sitting here talking about it. It just brings back so many memories and so many good times and trying to figure these things out because, you know, doing this for a living, I catch tigers, hammers, bulls, lemons, black tips, and we've had some success. I used to fish shark tournaments like a dumbass and kill sharks man, I've never experienced an animal this intelligent where it knew what was going on and it knew how to bite, you know, it would charge and bite at the leader. And I mean, it does barrel rolls halfway through the fight. I mean, it's just, it's unlike any shark fish I've ever battled. And I mean, tarpon, sailfish, tuna, marlin, just, there's no comparison to a great white on the intelligence level and how erratic they are. I mean, especially the small ones. The small ones are all over the damn place. And the big ones are so hard to stop. I mean, it's just so hard to put the brakes on one. When you're in a boat, because even when you slow it up and you get on top of them, pulling straight up is so tough. And, you know, the first one that really was catching great whites was Frank Mundus back in the 60s and 70s. And he said, you know, there comes a time where you just can't land it, where a fish is so big that even when it stops moving, how are you going to pull 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 pounds up? Even though its body weight is less than the water, there comes a time where even if it's dead, it's really hard for man to pull that kind of weight straight up. So it's tough. It takes a full teamwork effort to land something of that size. And I haven't caught many of enormous ones. We get a lot of small ones, but the true giants are, man, they test you. The biggest one I've ever landed put me in physical therapy for 3 months because I blew out my back so bad. So, man, it's a hell of a fish. As you can see, I'm addicted.
Yeah, as you should be. That's good stuff. We've been going 20 more minutes. Let's knock out a bait check because we could definitely get a lot more fun stuff here because you've just created so much more stuff to talk about. Definitely got to keep going here. This bait check is being brought to you by Kids Can Fish. Head on over to the website, kidscanfish.net, and take a look at all the great things that they're doing. Here you can see through the website, They've got all the information right here. They are a state and federally recognized 501c3 charitable foundation. All the camps and clinics all get funded back into the organization to help these kids go out and go fish. If you also want information on the Running of the Bulls tournament, it'll be updated right here up on top. And if you want to learn more about the entire team, you can take a look at the pro staff links and learn all about Caroline, their partners, how to get in touch with them, and the photo gallery is always great. If you'd like to help them further, you can do one more. You can go over to Promar Ahi and take a look at that website, and you can buy into the CastNet. This is the specialized one. This is the one that you hear a lot about. Caroline has talked a lot about it, and a portion of the proceeds go back into Kids Can Fish. They have the 3-foot, the 4-foot, and the 5-foot. All these things are great, and it all goes back into the Kids Can Fish Foundation to help these kids continue to do great things with these camps. Keep your ears open, because there's going to be a lot more things coming from them. It's always great, and always great to be a part of it. So you're talking about with these great whites. I mean, like we said, the transition of the story has been great. You know, green, super green, learned into this. Okay, teamed up with some people to get it into other ones, and now it's grown into where you're at. It's like, okay, I know what I need to do, how to do it. One thing I didn't know, and I love that you brought up, was the intelligence. And it's been said, you know, great whites are a very smart, they're a smart creature. They're great apex predators. The way they hunt, that way they move, how deep they go, all these things, really cool. But for one to be able to know, all right, watch this. I'm a barrel roll you. I'm gonna run at you. I'm gonna eat this. That's impressive. That means something. It's been thinking. Mm-hmm. So, let's talk about into the secondary portion here, and then we'll bounce back in. So you talked about when you get them next to the boat to get them cleared off. Before people freak out, when you do, how is the clearing of the hook and the pictures process? How does that work?
How does the clearing, did you say clearing of the hook?
Yeah, yeah, they're in the hook out and get them back out for
some. You know, it's tough, and you know what, I won't lie to you. There's a lot of sharks that we leave the hook in. I mean, there's been some sharks where we've had a full set of tags, satellite tag, acoustic, and everything. And we passed on all of them because the shark it's too crazy. And, you know, my biggest fear in all this is killing one. And so far, we've never had a fatality in any of these. So if I can pop the hook out, I'm going to. But if I need to leave it in, I'm going to leave it in. Because I'm not using stainless hooks. You know, these stainless hooks will last over a year. And I remember 15 years ago when I was using stainless on tigers, I was catching these tigers, and the next year I would catch the same tiger, and there's my hook in his mouth again. He's saying, well, hook. So I'm not using stainless anymore. You know, I use this hook I tied it to the dock just out of curiosity, right where my boat is, to see how fast it would rust out. And it took about a little over 2 months for it to completely dissolve, for it to break. So if I have to leave the hook in, man, it doesn't bother me at all. We got a monster in December, and I was just telling the scientists the other day, like, it's probably gone now. That hook, so I don't really consider it a big thing, but I try to get the hook out. I just don't want to, you know, I don't want to risk the fish's life to try to do it. I remember, you know, being a kid, you know, you catch a bass and you got your favorite lure and it's deep in there and you're working it so much. Now there's blood everywhere and the damn fish is dead, you know, so it's just, it's not always worth it to get the hook out. You know, a lot of these sharks I catch, I mean, they got like lemon sharks, tiger sharks, hammerheads. They got multiple stingray barbs in their jaw and their throat and their tongue, all over their mouth. And these stingray barbs are thick. They're thicker than the hook I'm using. So if they're doing fine with these stingray hooks that are, you know, poisonous, covered in bacteria, you know, a metal hook that's going to rust out in a couple months, I don't think has any impact whatsoever. So, but when I get the shark on the side of the boat, I have a de-hooker. I've got two of them. It's a pole. It's about 3 feet long with a pigtail on it. And I go down there and I just kind of pop it with that de-hooker, the long one. If it's a smaller hook I'm using, then I use a little gun. I like this. You know, it's crazy, man. The best gun for like de-hooker gun is the one you get off Amazon. Like the ones at Bass Pro and West Marine, they don't spin the hook, but there's this one on Amazon that does really well, like spinning the hook. And so I've been using that one on the smaller hooks and the smaller sharks, like black tips and you know, black nose and hammerheads and stuff like that. But with the big ones, I use a pigtail. So we try to pop it out with that, but it's not imperative that we get it out. I've recaptured so many sharks with my hook in them, either with the stainless hook from years prior or the hook I'm using now. So, and you know, we've recaptured one of the great whites so far. Actually, the first great white ever landed. I caught it again 8 months later, and it was fine. You know, it looked like it was in great shape. There was no infection, or it didn't look thin or sick or anything. So, and we're putting satellite tags on these things. So I'm kind of seeing what happens and where they go and how they're acting. And are they still pinging a month later, 3 months later, 6 months or a year later? And years later, they're still being seen. So, so to answer your question, I try to pop out the hook, but I don't make it, you know, a priority.
I've heard this numerous times from a lot of the shark guys. They say, like, look, you try your best, but if you use the right gear, it's going to rust out and fall off, and they're going to be just fine. And like you just said, that one, 2 months, that's a pretty good difference in hooks right there. That's a nice change. I like that. And I love, and I didn't get to say this earlier, I think that's phenomenal that you've had a zero kill, you know, you have no kill rate, which is phenomenal. Congratulations, because I know that's not easy. And
that's just, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'll make my point quick. That's one of the things that I'm loving about talking about this too, is the difference between land-based shark fishing and boat shark fishing. The land-based, you know, you got to get them over the sandbar. You got to get them in. You have a little bit more time because all they're coming is one direction. Whereas the boat, you're moving around a lot. They're going to stay alive a little longer. Your fight can last because they're still getting water over their gills. They're still able to maneuver. They're still able to do that. And then they can swim off and be fine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're, you know, those land-based guys, man, they're hardcore. I mean, I'm pretty good friends with a few of them, and I ask them questions like, hey, what do you think of this reel? Well, I tell you, there's nobody who knows more about reels or line or hook. I mean, those guys are so knowledgeable. It's really impressive, man. And there's, like I said, those guys are, for not doing that for a living, it's just a hobby. I don't know. But it's definitely impressive, the intelligence of these guys that are catching these big fish. I don't know the guy that caught the great white down in Navarre. I don't know any of those guys. I just know some of the ones around here, and man, they're extremely knowledgeable in all the tackle. And just like me, you know, they want that fish to swim off, because if it doesn't swim off and this thing washes up on the beach, you know, it's going to make papers, and the more papers, the more media it makes, the more people are going to say, let's ban fishing. You know, they banned shark fishing in Hawaii. I mean, and you know, so next is going to be maybe California or New York, and it's going to trickle down. I mean, there's more and more people, you know, against fishing, especially shark fishing. So, you know, we all have the same goals, to make sure this thing swims away without coming back and, you know, torching us a few days later.
Yep. Yes, very much so. So let's talk about the tagging program. Let's talk about the stat. So you, like you said, you bring these fish up, and if you can, you're throwing a satellite tag on, whether it's acoustic for tracking purposes. How does that process work, and what's the end result there?
Man, it's so cool. You know, and the benefit is it makes me a better fisherman, because I get to see where these things are going, and then I get to look, see what the water temperature is. And I post all of it. You know, I put, every time I get a track or something new or something interesting, I put it up, because I think it's interesting for everybody. But so we put an acoustic tag on, and the acoustic, it's probably the least interesting for myself and maybe the public, because it's not immediate. But we have receivers, scientists have receivers from Maine to Miami, all up down the ocean. And every time one of these sharks swims a couple hundred yards from one of these receivers, it trips it immediately. And so there's these acoustic tags and sharks, redfish, sturgeon, tarpon. I mean, there's an array of receivers all up down the coast. So they always keep track of what's where. And then there's a spot tag, which is a satellite tag that goes on the dorsal fin. That's real time. That's immediate. So every time that shark's fin breaches the surface, it connects to a satellite. Satellite, you know, sends it down and says, here's the shark right now. It just pinged in off of whatever. You know, we got a shark right now that's pinging in the Gulf of Mexico. It looks like it's on its way to Pensacola right now. And it's pretty wild. First thing I do in the morning is I look at my email to see if, you know, this thing is, you know, off Pensacola, you know, if it's pinging in. It's so cool. So there's a... We put that on, and then there's another one called a PSAT tag. And the PSAT is programmed to stay on either 6 months, 8 months, a year, 2 years, whatever it be. And that tracks the daily depths it goes to, the light levels, the salinity, the locations. And that pops off after 6 months or a year, whenever it's programmed. And then it says, hey, come get me. And then somebody drives out, picks it up, plugs it into a laptop. And it's just like an insane amount of data for scientists to get. So we're putting three tags in these great whites. And just recently this year, man, it's really cool. This is the first season. We're putting camera tags on these things. Camera tags on a shark. Are you kidding me? This is so
what?
Cool.
Oh, that's going to be so awesome.
Cool. Oh, it's so wild, man. So we caught this big. It was first one that went on was this big shark we called Lee Beth. December 8th, we caught her. She's a giant. She's the biggest shark I've caught in a few years, weight-wise. I mean, she's about 14 feet long, but she was so fat and so beat up from the seals. She had seals. Anyway, so we put the whole array of tags on her. And then the scientist I was with that day was Megan Wint from the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy. She reached over, put a camera tag on the dorsal fin. And then it's swimming around. It's essentially like a GoPro. And it's a GoPro that's programmed to come off at a certain time whenever they program it. Pops off the shark. And then we got to go pick it up. And then they plug it in. And you sit there and watch the shark. And this camera is not like a crappy camera. Like, this is some pretty awesome material. And you can see the fish swimming around. And it's incredible. So it's just, man, this is so cool. I'm so excited about this because, eventually we're going to see something, something awesome, like them eating a bottlenose dolphin or a human or something crazy. It's going to be awesome, man. But so that's what we're doing now. So all this other satellite tags, I think, is really cool to see where they go and what they're doing and how long they're staying on the surface and different types of weather and water temperatures. But this new camera tag is, man, it's the thing. I'm really excited about that.
That's going to be a cool game changer, especially me, not only entertainment purposes, of course, but the knowledge piece of seeing how they attack, where they attack, how they move. I mean, Shark Week just got a whole lot more interesting.
It definitely did. And it's so cool also to see them react to, after a release, and it also kind of gives me a little bit of backing, because you get these people say, well, the shark's probably dead. How does it, how did it recover? Well, here's the video. We got the video. I think it goes out Saturday. There's a clip or two that's going to go public coming up here in a couple of days. And it shows the sharks swimming off and going on the surf. I don't know. I don't want to say too much, but it's pretty cool, man. I'm really excited about that.
That's going to be, is that going to be on Atlantic White Shark Conservancy's page?
Yeah. So they'll be the first ones to post it. The tag was extremely expensive, and they worked really hard to modify this and do everything right. So they're the ones that are going to be publicizing it. And then I'm sure, I'm going to record it or share whatever platform it's on. And I'm really excited about that because it's a game changer to see what these guys are doing. Like, you actually get a visual of what's happening to these suckers. So I'm excited about that.
I can't wait to see it. I know our episode's going to air after that happened, but I'm already excited to see you share it. I'm going to share it and then link it back. But that's going to be cool. Oh, man, I'm excited, and I'm not even in the game. Oh, man. All right, so we've talked about a lot about these pieces. So you catch them, you tag them, you release them, you track them. Life's good. You continue on with that. You've taken out scientists to continue with the sport and also to help with the knowledge of them. That's your happy. Life is good. Let's talk about the charter business. Now, the charter side of this, you decided, all right, hey, I want to get into this. What got you into wanting to start guiding?
I'm sorry, you cut out the end. What got me into wanting to run a charter?
Yeah.
Ever since high school, man, I looked at these guys that were running charters here like they were Michael Jordan. I was like, any guy that can make a living on the water, and this is my thinking back then, not now. Now I think we're a bunch of idiots. Not making any much money, but back then, man, I looked at charter guys. It's like, they're the Michael Jordan of the area. They're making money catching fish. It doesn't get any better than that. I mean, it's so just and just obsession, man. Just fishing off the beach all the time, wishing I was out there, and really, hating school. I mean, I hated school growing up here, and it's warm 10 months out of the year. I mean, it was really hard to, concentrate on anything, book wise. And I just never had really interest in that sort of thing. And I was a terrible student. So just obsessed with the outdoors, obsessed with fishing. And my family didn't want me to do it. My dad was very against me being a guide. And I bought my first boat without anybody knowing. It was, I don't know how I got a loan, but I got a loan on a boat with probably about $1,500 to my name. I think I was 20, 21. And at the time I was doing all sorts of stuff. I was I was bartending. I was running a pressure washing business. I drove a limo on the weekends, man. It was, I did everything. And then, so finally, you know, bought a boat and started running charters illegally because I didn't have a captain's license. Cause when you're 21 years old, 22 years old, nothing's going to stop you. So then I finally told my dad, I was saying, my dad was like, okay, I'm going to pay for you to go to sea school and get your captain's license. So I did that. And then I was able to advertise and really get going. The first few years were really tough. There was not a lot of money in it. And then just slowly, it took a few years to get going. And then once I got over the hump, and I don't want to brag, but I won a couple of tournaments, a couple of king tournaments, a couple of shark tournaments, got a state record, then another state record. And then it really got crazy where I was like, okay, now I'm doing good. And I got a new boat. It's been a journey, man. It was a tough start. It was a real tough start, but I'm very fortunate to be in the shoes I'm in right now.
Nice. Well done. Well done. So tell me about your charters. What kind of charters do you offer?
I do in the summer months, I do 4-hour, 5-hour, 6-hour, 8-hour, 10-hour charters. In the summer, I mean, the majority of my charters, they really want a big shark. So that's what we're doing the majority of the time, but I still get stuff for, we go after the bull reds, cobia, king mackerel. I love tarpon fishing. I mean, I think great whites are number one and tarpon are right there next to it. And then everything else is way down on my list. At least I just think the tarpon fishing is so much fun. And, so I love doing that, but, I do all sorts of stuff, 4-hour, 5-hour, 6-hour, 8-hour. I take up to 4 people. Just private groups. We leave at 8 o'clock and we go out there and, see if I can either traumatize somebody or make their dream come true. One or the other.
Left, right, lateral limit right there. Oh my God. That's
hilarious. I've got so many parents that come back in the next year and they're just like, my son or my daughter had the time of their life, best time of their life last year, but they won't step foot in the ocean anymore. And I was like, well, you're welcome. it's kind of funny how that works, but I never preach about don't go in the water, but I just think, where we're catching these bulls, tigers, hammers, lemons, we're so close to the beach. It's surprising. Every time I go to drop the anchor, the first thing they all say is this is where you're going. This is where you're going to catch. I was like, yeah, we're not, The biggest sharks are coming in, pretty close. And I remember back in the day when I was fishing shark tournaments, I'd show up at the captain's meeting, all these boats would go out like 20, 30, 40 miles, 50, and they have all this stuff. And we fish like right off the beach every year. And we won or got second almost every single time. And man, it was so cool. I mean, granted, I had a little bit of an edge in the game because that's what I was doing. That's what I do for a living. But it was, the biggest sharks are always close to the beach.
I'm going to save that as a clip because people are going to be like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? So many people don't realize that there are plenty of sharks within a half a mile from the beach just because they've got to eat too. And there's plenty of – why do you think we fish from the shore? We can catch them. What do they want?
The whole open ocean, man, it's desert. And just like us, we don't want to live in the desert. We want to live around structure, life, some sort of ecosystem. And there's so much structure closer to shore, whether it be shipwrecks or ledges or, there's so much life and so much structure inside of 20 miles, inside of 5 miles, inside of 1 mile, and especially in these inlets, these sounds around here. And it's kind of like a big chum dispenser. You get a shipwreck, it's got stuff growing off of it and little fish, and that puts out a scent for all those sharks and just, pulls them right in.
And there's the science, folks, right there. There's a couple neat clues for you. All right, we're into the good in here. Let's get ourselves into another paycheck because we're going to get into the nitty gritty. This paycheck is being brought to you by The Sinker Guy. Y'all know I love it. Go over to thesinkerguy.com and take a look at everything that Chip's got going on in The Sinker Guy Garage. Lots of fun stuff in this website, y'all. I mean, you can get lost in it, really. If you go take a look, you just get right to the homepage here. It's got a little couple of things to talk about. But We go into the good stuff, get into the garage, into the shop. Need sinkers? It's in his name. It's got you covered there. The Bruno rig, the Uno rig, and the Fishing Mortician rig. We all love those. But if you need other supporting gear, he's got you covered with that. Bait, floats, fishing line, so many different things, any kind of other supporting gear. There's a lot on the website. So again, go over to thesinkerguy.com, take a look. Get your order in today. Extremely fast shipping, superb customer service, and Chip's going to make sure you're taken care of every time. That's just how he does it. Sinkerguy.com. Get your order in today. So you've started talking about with the sharks being close and the charter and that, and you offer more than shark trips. Like you said, the bowl, cobias, there's plenty of fish to catch, especially off of Hilton Head. South Carolina is a phenomenal fishery. I've had a couple of guests on from South Carolina that do shark fishing and said it's great fishing. You just got to find the right place to go to. So let's talk about this. What sets the shark fishing charter apart from your other types of charters with the experiences?
What sets them apart, we go out and catch a couple of, I'll give you a story. Back in the day, I used to run these all day charters and we'd go way out. We'd go 30, 40 miles out, catch grouper, some cobia, barracuda, king mackerel or whatever. And then I would always in the day coming into my shark hole. I drop in my shark hole, cut the head off something, drop it down there. We get a big tiger or whatever. And my people would go ballistic and they'd pick up their phone. At the time, I think they were like Nokias or Blackberries. And this is when the light bulb really went off. They pick up the phone and they say, yeah, we caught some king mackerel and a couple of barracuda, but we caught a 10-foot shark, and then we go ballistic. And then they would say, hey, what do you have open tomorrow? Can we go tomorrow? But we only want to go shark fishing. And then they would come back the next year, those same people, and they'd say, you know what, we don't want to go all the way out there. We just want to go catch a big shark. You know, my cousin's in town, or I want to show my dad, and we go out there and we catch a big shark. And those big sharks you could rely on. So the interest level is through the roof. And when I get people that ask, like, well, you know, what do you, I mean, there's no king mackerel week on Discovery Channel. The interest in sharks is always has been an all time high, and it just keeps growing and growing. It's the lion of the sea. It's, you know, when you go to Australia, you want to see the crocodile, you go to Africa, you want to see the lion. It's just in the ocean, the shark is the king. So I think the interest is always going to be there. And as far as the fight, I mean, it's, you hook a big hammerhead, there's just no comparison to the battle. And, so we get a ton of sharks and we've done halfway decent. South Carolina's done a pretty good job. There's a lot of guides here that have done a really good job landing these things and taking care of them. But we do, man, I'll tell you the bad thing. We do got to, they haven't had it for a year or two though. We've got a shark tournament. I'm guilty. I used to fish it. Where they kill them, you know, and it sucks because it's an old fish. It's 20, 30, 40-year-old fish. You drag it in, take pictures of it, and you roll its body off the dock. It sucks. So they do get thinned out there. But, and you know, I see a lot of other guides complaining about how bad the sharks are in Florida and Georgia. Those aren't the tigers. Those aren't the hammers or the great whites. Those are the sandbar sharks, and a lot of times they get confused with the bull, but those sandbar sharks, are their numbers are crazy. I mean, I never even caught one 12 years ago, and then all of a sudden I start catching a few, and then I'm catching a bunch, and then I was like in the fall and the spring catching a ton, and now they're here all year round. I'm catching little pups of these sandbar sharks. So these sandbars are definitely, they've blown up in our area. There's a lot of sandbar sharks, but it's a good thing, and it can be an aggravating thing. I know a lot of these guys that try to catch grouper and snapper and king mackerel tournaments and stuff, these sandbars are destroying them, it's a protected species, so you know it's tough to get around them. But it's kind of tough to get around the legality of it.
It happens. I mean, that's the cool thing about conservancy too. I mean, like you said, years ago you weren't catching them, now they've grown. So I mean, that's the stuff works. We're just going to leave it at that. The damn stuff works, which is good. On another piece of the charter here. So like you said, you've had clients come in, they go out with you, they go out for grouper, they go out for these big fish, the game fish, the trophy fish, and then finish it with sharks. Super awesome. How do you prepare your clients for a day like that?
What I do is, most of my customers, I think, either or follow me on Instagram or Facebook, so they already have an idea what's going to happen. But I also feel out on the phone, because I tell you, I get a lot of calls where it's like, you know, a dad and a seven-year-old, eight-year-old, six-year-old. I'm like, all right, are you okay watching these? Are these kids okay watching you? Because I can't let them battle anything. You know, don't waste your money on me if we're just going to target 2-3-4 foot sharks. I mean, go book somebody else at half the cost. You know, I want to catch a, to me, it's a tournament every day. I want to catch a 1,000-pound tiger shark every single day. That's the goal, or an enormous hammerhead. So I always kind of let them know, like, you know, is your son okay watching you? Or your daughter okay watching you? And a lot of times it's not, and I recommend somebody else for them. And I mean, I can do the 2- and 3-footer stuff, but I don't want to do it. If I can, you know, I mean, I love chasing a giant. I think it's so much more fun than doing. I mean, I love kids. I mean, I'm great with them, but so I try to prepare for that, you know. So I tell them, you know, the kids okay watching, and then when they get on the boat, you know, it's so funny, man. I get so many people like, oh no, it's fine. I've caught, we've caught sailfish, we've caught tarpon or marlin. It's no problem, you know. We've done this before. I'm like, no. And you know, you don't want to argue with them because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to tick them off. But I know, you know, they think they know, but I know there's no way they're going to be able to do this alone. So if I just have like one guy, I'll say, hey, listen, let me bring somebody. Let me bring my buddy with you. And I'm just going to use him for backup. So when you get tired, you can give a ride to him for a little while. And I warn him, but at the same time, like, I don't want to oversell because it's more exciting for the customer to be like, we're probably just going to catch like a 50 pounder and then to latch on to a 300-400-500 pounder and their mind is blown. It's better to undersell and get something enormous than to oversell it and have them disappointed. I've always been a big advocate of not preaching too much on how big, you know, those days that I'm like super confident, it's like August, hasn't rained in days, and I know there's hammers out there, you know, and I know we're going to get one, and I don't want to lead on because I don't want them to have expectations. I always try to undersell it, you know, so they're more excited about it, and you know, you always remember your first ones. Like, I'll never forget my first great white, my first tiger shark ever caught, you know, and so you want that first experience to be just mind-blowing, and it's so cool coming back, and, you know, it's like 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night, you get the text messages like, we're still on cloud nine. I can't believe that happened. Shit, you know, just, I mean, that's a day maker for me. That's so cool. I'm so fortunate to be in this position. So I don't really prepare him much. I mean, once we get out there, I gave him the breakdown. I put the belt on him, the fighting belt. I tell him how I want him to do. Cause I've got a lot of customers never even seen the ocean before. Some of them never even turned the handle before. So I give him the whole breakdown and you know, but I don't want to tell him how big we could possibly get. I try not to just cause I want him to be surprised.
Well, I'm sure the look on their face when they, you know, like, oh, okay, oh, hey, set the hook. This is what is this? You know, the ultimate shock of, like, oh God, what have I done? Sure that's a nice little added bonus of like, told ya, okay, now we're we're gonna finish this and you're gonna win today. That's gotta be five. So yeah, that's good.
Oh man, it's so cool. You know what's so awesome too is getting these. It happens once in a while, and I know this sounds arrogant, but I don't care. It's getting those messages or a phone call that says, like, that was the best day of my life. I just can't tell you what, you know, and it's so cool. You know, years ago, I remember the first time somebody ever said that to me was this big lady, and she was very large, and I don't know, I think she was from like Kansas or somewhere, and it was her and her kids, and we went out and we caught like all sorts of stuff. We put a king mackerel, a grouper, caught a dolphin, a mahi that day. We get back and she can't even walk. She's so big. And we finally got her off the boat and she was like, this is the best day of my life. And she just went on and like how much she thanked me. I was like, I can't believe, you know, this is so cool. You know, it's so cool to be able to, you know, experience this with somebody. And then you get a couple more, you know, of those. But let me tell you, at the same time, you do get some people that are, I can feel they're pissed off, you know, because they didn't get their dream fish. So as many ones as I've, you know, positive ones, I've gotten plenty that were like, you know, upset, you know, that we didn't catch what they wanted. You know, and it's hard, you know, there's plenty of people that want to catch a dream. It's just, I had a guy I'm getting ready to take again, I think in a few weeks. He's come in 2 years in a row and wanted to catch a hammerhead. And I caught a hammerhead before his day and after his day. But on his day, we couldn't get a hammerhead. We only caught bull sharks.
Oh, no.
And he's so disappointed. And it's like, oh, man, you know. And So it is, you know, I do get some people that are disappointed, but it's a lot of it's out of my control. There's nothing I can do about it. But the part about disappointing people is definitely a hard pill to swallow because you want it more than they do. It's weird. You know, I'm friends with a lot of other captains and we talk about that too. Little does the customer know that we want that fish more than they do, even though they're spending $1,000 or $1,500 or $800, whatever they're spending. Money does not have value on that. It's just our stomachs are turning. Our minds are like, should we move over? Should we do this? No, stay put. Should I change the bait? No, stay on it. All right, change the bait. Your mind is going just a million miles a minute there and just trying to think how you can catch that dream fish for them. And they're starting to look at their watch. And, you know, so it's man, I had a woman on my boat a couple years ago. And she was all excited to go. And this is the bad part about social media. You know, she sees all the stuff with catch. So she thinks that's going to happen like immediately. We get out there to like one of my favorite spots. And I had baits out like seven, I think it was seven. And she looks at me and she goes, Chip. And she does like, and then she points to her watch like, is it going to happen? And I looked at her and I was like, is this sarcasm? And then I was like, oh my gosh, she's legit. And then I look at the clock and I go, it's been 7 minutes. Just hang in there. Just trust me. You know, we got half the day here. And then it just like 5 minutes later, bam, woo, you know, start smoking it. And I couldn't help it. But I looked at her, I was like, see, I told you, you just gotta be patient. But just that little like, is it gonna happen? Or, you know, so it's tough. There's a lot of pros and a lot of cons to doing this for a living. Just the amount of pressure that I feel like that I'm on. I know some of these other captains don't feel any pressure, which is awesome. I wish I could look at it like they put out lines and just have the philosophy like, if it's gonna happen, it's gonna happen. If not, then screw you. But I feel like I'm under the gun every trip. And so there are pros and cons, but it's all positive. There are a couple negative points to it.
Yeah, but that's the real of it. I mean, that is the truth of running a business like this. It's fishing. It's not catching. We all want to catch, you know, and that's a hard one, which actually led me perfectly into this question. What have been some very valuable lessons after starting and running this charter business?
Man, I tell you, patience, you know, the knowledge you have, be careful who you dish it to, because then they become smarter than you. For example, if I tell you, if you go fishing with me, let's say in a king mackerel tournament, everything, I'm going to be fishing full throttle that day using everything I know. And then they apply what they know and use it themselves on top of what they already know. It sounds kind of selfish, but you know, you worked really hard to find an area or how to fish at this spot or that spot. And, once the gig's up, there's no, you know, like Men in Black, there's no little flashy memory thing to clear somebody's, you know, hard drive and you can start over, whatever. You got to be careful with that stuff. I've taken a lot of people out and then the next day or the next weekend, they're sitting right there in my spot fishing exactly how I am. And so it's, you gotta be pretty careful on that. I've been burned so many times on, you know, taking somebody out and then, you know, they see how it's done. And then they're sitting right next to me doing the same thing. And I'm guilty. I've done it too. When I was in my early mid twenties, I followed, you know, some captains. There's one guy on the island. He's a great king mackerel fisherman. He's the best kingfish guy here. His name's Mark. Fortunately, he took me with him a bunch and showed me how to catch king mackerel and sailfish. And, you know, I applied that knowledge to, you know, and we fished the same tournaments against each other. And even though we're friends, I'm sure there are times it's like, damn it, I wish he wasn't there. So other errors, man, you know, I embrace a lot of them because you don't get better without them. You know, I've always been a big believer that when you lose, you learn. You know, you just don't want to lose the lesson. You fight a fish for an hour or 2 hours or whatever, or 30 minutes with a ton of drag on it, whatever it be. Wherever that breaks, you got to make it better. You know, you got to learn like, all right, I don't need to tie that knot. I don't need to use that swivel. That hook has been twice. You know, there's one specific hook. It's a owner hook. I want to say it's a live bait owner hook. And I've had three great white sharks spit it. It's landed one. I've hooked four sharks with it. Three great whites have spit it. One and only landed one. I'll never use that hook again. So it's just through trial and error, you use a, I can't remember the name of that hook, but it's definitely an owner hook. And owners are usually awesome, but if for some reason it just doesn't work for a great white. I hate to say it because it sounds selfish, but you got to be careful on who you want to teach it and so forth. Because next thing you know, they'll be out there right there next to you, fishing wise. You know, but I'm always into helping. You know, I get so many messages with these kids that want to be a charter guide and stuff. So I'm always thrilled to help them and tell them, you know, the pros and cons and tell them how to get started and so forth. That's a great question though, man. That's tough. I guess the errors, you just got to kind of embrace and learn from them.
All right. Well, last two questions in this category, and we'll get into the last bits and pieces here. First one has, let's make it easy. How do people find you and book trips with you?
Social media is huge now. Going to Google, typing in Hilton Head Charter Fishing, you know, that's big. Although I quit, you know, but Instagram is huge. I'm on Instagram under Outcast Sport Fishing. I'm under Facebook, Outcast Sport Fishing. Man, I'm embarrassed to admit it, man, but I'm on TikTok. I'm not, you know what's crazy is
TikTok is awesome.
I had a group of girls on my boat. I think I had these little teenage girls in the down a couple years ago. And they were like, you got to be on TikTok. You got to be on. So it's like, oh my gosh. So I give them my phone. They made me a TikTok account right there on the boat. And then I posted a video. And I got more hits on the video I posted in like 24 hours than I ever have on YouTube or anything. I was like, holy crap. Yep. I can't believe it. So I'm on everything. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, even TikTok. So. That's how they find me, or my phone, you know, you can call me. I'm on the water so much, except this time of year, as you noticed, I haven't been on the water that much in the winter time. In the winter, I'm only fishing for a great white maybe once every 10 days or once a week at most or something. So, but in the summer, it's tough to get because I'm on the water every single day till 7-8 o'clock at night.
Well, you already answered the next part, so that's perfect. So we get to move into the next one. Well, it's been the last one here, so let's knock out the very last bait check of the episode, and we'll get you through these last pieces. This bait check is being brought to you by Ninja Tackle. You guys know I absolutely love Ninja Tackle. I love all the rods and all the gear that I ever get from there. It's always phenomenal and top-notch. Now, right here, you got to talk about it. The old Little Bummy. That's right. Bama Beach Bum's littler rod. The Little Bummy is a 9'6" rod. Hearing a lot of great things about this. It's been doing really well on the surf and a couple other other places you can use it. If you go over to the website, ninjatackleva.com, as you can see, plenty of great things on the website. The Ninja Dagger series, the Beach Bum, the Bummy Stick, the 12-foot, which you guys know, I love my 12-foot. The 9-footer is phenomenal. There's really nothing bad. But if you need rigs, he's got you covered. He got you with ES lures and other hand-tied rigs, hooks, other gear. He's got it all through here. As you can see, 15 pages worth of stuff, sand spikes and bait, all good things all the way through. If you're into the firearm and tactical side, oh, he's got you covered there. Ninja Tactical, lots of good pieces of gear in here. As you scroll through, you're going to find something you need. I know it. Always good stuff. NinjaTackleVA.com. That's the website. Go on over. Get your order in today. And social media being such an important factor now, is especially for spreading word business-wise, it does great things. And yeah, TikTok is a necessary evil, and it can be really good there. So what made you decide, all right, I've got to breach into this. I got to start sharing this stuff on social media.
Business, man. I mean, it really comes to that. It's, it just gets you business. That's really what has motivated me. I remember my website guy was like, you don't have an Outcast Facebook page. I'm like, why? He's like, yeah, you need to be on there. We need to post once a week. I was like, oh, crap. And so I put it on there and I started posting and stuff. And then I started getting business from it. And then it's really what I try to, do. It also is very aggravating because that's where that's where the hate mail comes in. You walk out the house, they're going to congratulate me, my neighbors or somebody at the bartender. Hey, congrats on that massive hammer you caught a few days ago. But then you go online and you see people saying, you jerk, how could you do that? That thing definitely died. It definitely did that. So there's, it gives people an outlet to bash you And, you know, it's like, I'm a big fan of Conor McGregor. I think he's the most entertaining person in MMA, probably in all sports right now. He's just such a, he's so witty. And, but every time you post on Twitter, you look at the comments, I mean, you just get crushed. And I mean, if I read these things, man, I'd be having to take antidepressants every other hour. I mean, you just, you know, so it, the bad part about social media is, you know, it gives everybody an open invite to just bash that out of you. But but most of it's positive, and you have to do it if you're running a business these days. It's catering towards tourism or a lot of groups of people every single year. So it's just part of it.
Never read the comments. So someone's like, stay out of the comments. I'm like, well, you got to interact. Stay out of the comments.
Another thing is you have to read the I took a pastor a couple months ago, and he told me I can't read the comments, because if they're bad, I feel like crap for the rest of the day, and if they're good, I feel too high and too good about myself. So he tells me he didn't read the comments, but I feel like I need to read the comments, because sometimes the ball gets rolling. Like, somebody will comment and say something like, that shark's definitely dead. You know, there was a scientist years ago, and he's like, I don't care. I'll throw anybody under the bus. Dr. Domar from California. He bashed me. He took a clip of mine. This is one of the first great whites I caught. Took it, put it on another shark page full of hippies and scientists, and said, this shark is definitely dead. This is not the right position to have a great white shark. He said he fought it for X amount of hours, which was all false. He exaggerated my fight time, and then talked about and all these people pile on and start crushing me. I'm like, wait a second, he lied. I called him out on it a couple different times, and he apologized and said it was an accident. He was in an airport and wrote down the wrong fight time and so forth. I'm like, well, it has an acoustic tag and it's pinging off Georgia, you know, it clicked. So I try to, you know, stop it before it starts, and otherwise, man, I don't know. I'm just not a fan of it. Maybe I just need to block the comments, but I'm good with it now. I sometimes have some fun with them and just kind of poke fun at them a little bit.
It's always the trolls. The negative ones are the ones, and I hate to say it, it's almost like a sales thing. You know, nothing happens until the word no is said in a sale. You know, then you can start it. It's like the trolls love that game. It's like, you just don't have time. You really, you spent the 30 seconds to make the comment. How do you feel now?
It's uneducated. It's people that are uneducated. Yes. If they knew what we were doing or knew much about sharks and their post mortality rates and stuff, they probably wouldn't say anything. But it's these people that, you know, not too sure about it. Man, and by the way, so we're 100% on survival rate on the great white sharks, 100% on the hammerheads. But I did a post mortality study with the state once on black tips, and we did have a couple of fatalities. It was really interesting. I mean, when you catch enough, you know, you're eventually gonna. And we're also putting these huge 100-pound black tips in the boat. They're taking blood and measuring them and doing all this stuff. You know, so it takes a little bit longer than the average angler of like pop a hook out. You know, get a quick picture, pop a hook out, let it go. So you do a little bit more. We still, I want to say like 80% is still survived. So it was, you know, we did have a few fatalities in the study, but it was still like really good, especially for a boated fish of that size and still be worked on. So I think that was the highest mortality rate we've had on any of the sharks. And it's still well above, you know, well above half. So, you know, so it's positive.
Yeah, definitely wins there. So you rucking. Huh. Are you putting on a backpack and going for a walk? You're trucking through all this stuff when it comes to social media. You're running the guide. You're taking the pictures for the people. You're sharing that one out. People are sharing it through that. And the experiences are normally very positive. What has been one of the things that you absolutely despise about having to do social media?
It's so time consuming. It's terrible. It's terrible how time you think you're going to look at, you know, read the comments or respond or something, and you think it'll take 5 minutes, and next thing you know, you're on your phone for like an hour. I wish more people, you know, years ago, 100% of my clients will call to book a charter. Well, now the new customer calls and say, Hey, I want to book a charter. What do you have open? All right. Well, then I got to respond. What date? And they say, well, these dates. Well, how many people? And it just goes back and forth for like 2 or 3 days when like literally a 3 or 4 minute conversation on the phone and it would have been squashed. I could have answered all your questions, been a little more clear on what we're catching and what to expect. But instead now they're confused. Wait, I thought you said 4 people. Is that with you or without you? So, but at the same, you know, so I understand, you know, talking on the phone is kind of a pain in the butt. Just who would, you know, I get it, but, you know, I guess the back and forth on questioning on all the questions on fishing and what to expect. It's good though. You know, I remember when I first started fishing, I had to, you know, I was spending, I think $1,500 a month on Google. And, you know, and that's just to be in like the top 3 or 4 of Hilton Head Charter Fishing or Hilton Head Fishing Charters. And I remember I think I was one of the first guys to have a fishing Instagram and Facebook page. And I remember some of the other captains like, what are you doing? That's a waste. I'm like, what? It's free. You guys we're all paying $1,000 to $2,000 a month on different phrases. And all this stuff is free. Why in the world would you not do it? So it definitely has some positives and you can gain attention from sponsors and customers, potential customers. So there's more positives than negatives, but there are some, yeah, there are definitely some negatives.
Yep. Well, we've been going for a while here and I know I had 100 questions on that category, but you nailed a lot of them all through it. So it worked out really well. And this episode has been very heavy. Like I said, we were talking education on sharks, your charter business, great whites, and you've absolutely nailed it on so many levels. Before we move into the last one, I want to congratulate you. I mean, you've been running a successful business on shark fishing. You're also contributing to the science of them. You're doing it happily and you're helping customers learn it. You're just hitting the trifecta. You're nailing all the great pieces. So congratulations, Captain. I know that that's not a simple task and you've been doing it successfully. Congratulations. Seriously.
Thanks, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. It's been fun. It's been miserable. It's been fun, man. I forgot to tell you, I got an ulcer my first couple of years on the water, just being so stressed out. But thank you. Thanks for the kind words. I appreciate that. It's been a good time and some awful times and some great times and some emotional times. I don't know, man. I feel like I could write a book, two books, one for the crazy customers I've taken through the years and one for the catches and stuff. It's been fun, but thanks.
No, glad to. All right, last two questions. We'll get you out of here for the day. I asked this one, and I know you've been doing boats, but you've been fishing a long time. What knowledge would you give to a brand new angler starting out?
Oh my gosh, man! How much time does this kid have? I would say, you know, don't skip on the sunblock. Just absorb as much as you can, and from everybody, and don't ever think. You know, I think. And me too, I'm guilty of this too. I remember being 20 years old and thinking, I know it all. I know how to catch this fish. You don't. You know, there's so much to learn. Every time you go fishing, don't ever say no to the invites. You know, when somebody asks you on their boat to go fish for a fish you're not even interested in, you know, let's say you only like redfish. Go fish with that. If he asks you to go out for fun to catch a tarpon, a sailfish, a marlin, a swordfish, man, don't decline. You're going to, it's such an experience to go out with somebody else and see how they do it. And then light bulbs go off like, oh, wait a second, maybe I can apply that with this fish or that fish. And, you know, it's not really a sport like baseball, like you're seeing 100-mile-an-hour ball and trying to hit it. It's really about absorbing as much information as you can and holding on to that information and using it in different areas and remembering all the things. And, you know, when I first started fishing for great white sharks, I remember this legend shark fisherman, Pete Cortuccio, used to tell me, he was like, you need 2 books. You need a book for your catches and a book for your skunks. And that's exactly what I did when I started fishing for these things. So I've got 10 years of, I got one book where every time I catch a great white, I write down the, and this is something some young guys ought to do too when they're trying to discover something. One book that's full of catches where I write down the water temperature, the water clarity, the color, the wind direction, the tide direction, what birds were in the area, did I see dolphin or manatee or what I saw, and you know, what the fish chose bait wise, did it like this over this, and did it like that, you know. So, and then after a few years, you can really kind of put together a chart of like, all right. And it's so cool because it's been so beneficial to me now. You know, it's like, man, I was lucky enough to have Shark Week want to do a show, and they called me like, hey, we want to go out on this date. And I look at the date and I'm like, okay, the tide's this way. Well, as the day got closer, it's a west wind. And incoming tide, west wind, that means this place, my favorite place, is going to suck. Gosh, you know, I'm not going to be able to fish here. I got to go fish this area. And your heart is telling you, no, don't do it. Stick with your best. Well, notes say that this place sucks on that wind. And it did. You know, I go out and we did, you know, had success. And it was all from following in the notes that I followed for years and years of the water temperature. You know, you get a prime spot that you see, you do the best in, you get the water clarity is 3 feet, not 1 foot or not 15 foot. You know, you just little things that you notice, little things in the water you notice, you know, so you just kind of absorb as much as you can. That's what I would tell, you know, just taking as much. You know, when it comes to land-based, I know most of your guys are land-based. I know they don't have that ability to go out and, you know, they don't have bottom machines where they can, you know, look to see if there's bait in the area or the water temperature. They just kind of go you know, they just go. But I think being in a boat, you have that ability to change areas. You can go 10 miles in a few minutes or move on a different ledge, you know, but just trying to absorb, I guess, as much as you can and have a good dermatologist that's very aggressive and chop it off any type of spots you're worried about, because it's coming. If you're out in the sun, you're going to get some spots you're going to need chopped on. So there's another one for you.
Good one there. All right, last question for you, sir. What's next for you?
I feel like I've been so fortunate. I've been, you know, chasing these great whites, and I'm just addicted to it. So I'm just going to stay on course, and I'm going to keep catching these things. I really want to put more camera tags on these sharks and see some crazy stuff. And I mean, the goal, I want to catch the biggest fish ever caught, man. I want to catch I'm a fisherman. I mean, I love all the science to it. I've been taking scientists, but I'm a fisherman at heart, and I want to catch the biggest fish ever caught on rod and reel. You know, Frank Mundus right now has the biggest one at 3,400 pounds. And we were fortunate enough we caught more than him. I think we passed him about three, four years ago. But you know, the majority of the ones I'm catching are 9, 10, 11 feet. Only once or twice a year are we getting one in that 14 to 16 foot range. Maybe once a year or twice a year. Last year we didn't catch one that size. So this year we've already gotten one well over 2,000 pounds. So I really, I really want to battle a 5,000 pounder. I want to catch something. There's been some that have been seen in the Atlantic. You know, the majority of great whites were killed in the 60s and 70s, and they put a ban on them on harvesting them. I can't remember the exact year. I want to say it was 19. I don't know. I don't want to say, otherwise somebody's going to call me, but I just can't remember the year they banned killing them. But anyway, they bounced back. The population now is booming on these great whites. So the majority are small, as it takes them 20 years to become sexually mature. So it takes them so long to breed. So, but now we're finally seeing that bounce back. But they've, you know, years ago, they tagged a couple off of one specifically off Cape Cod on a dead whale that was like 5,000 pounds. And, you know, this is a huge ocean, man. You know, there's so many out there that are well over 4,000, 5,000 pounds. I'm sure there's ones out there that are not quite jaw size, but probably pretty close to it. I would love that opportunity to wrap in on one of those and seeing if I can land it. So yeah, man, what's next? I want to chase one. I want to chase a 4 or 5 grander. That's what I've been really targeting and want to do. I've started a couple of years ago, really changing a few things up to eliminate the small ones and just go after giants. So just trying, man. That's what's next. That's really what I want.
That's awesome, Captain. Thank you again for coming on the show. Thanks for being here. You've been a phenomenal guest. I'm very appreciative of it. And I will make sure everything's linked back through the website and the podcast page. That way everybody can find you. And hopefully some more good stuff will be coming. I look forward to seeing your posts.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me. It's always good talking to you. And if you want to do another in the winter, I got all the time in the world. So, yeah, okay. Man. Best of luck to you. And I'll keep an eye. I'll keep an eye on this stuff, and definitely gotta watch some of your other ones. I saw some names on there I recognized. Like, oh my gosh, I gotta listen to this one. So yeah, thanks for the opportunity, bud. I appreciate it.
No problems. All right, we'll talk soon.
Okay, bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was awesome. That was freaking awesome. I loved it. Oh man, smiling like throughout three quarters of this thing. Again, everything that you need to find to get back to be able to see what the captain does, any of his charters, any of the events, all that stuff. Outcast Sport Fishing will be linked back onto findingdemosurfishing.com. It'll be on this podcast page. It'll also be on wherever you found it through social media. Go give them a follow. Lots of cool stuff on there. Lots of fun ones there. If you're going to be heading to the Hilton Head, South Carolina area, and you want to get in on this, you can reach out to the captain. Again, Outcast Sport Fishing. Reach out, get your booked up, get your charter booked, and just go have a blast. And by all means, share those pictures. I'd love to see it. Thanks for being Finding Demo Surfishing. It's been great having you. We'll see you next week. Take care of yourselves. I'm out.